Yes, this is the ghetto. Showing up now.
Ghetto by Donny Hathaway. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson. This week we will be talking about prison reform, the homeless, especially as it relates to veterans. And also a sounding off open mic performance by Dr. Mongo. In the studio with us today, along with Dr. Mongo, is Jamal As-Salam, in-house poet. Now we also have Nabingi Kuti with us on the phone. He's with the Martin Luther King Coalition for Jobs, Justice, and Peace. How you doing today, Nabingi?
Actually, it looks like Nabingi dropped, so we're going to try to get him back on the line in just a couple minutes here.
Okay, we're going to pull Nabingi up in a little while on the line. So at this time, let us move to our community calendar section, Mr. Earlene Anthony.
Community calendar for the month of August. This Friday, August the 19th, on this, the doors will open at 7 p.m. People Film Series present Dylan Avery's Loose Change, An American Coup. And the film is free. And there will be a discussion. What do you think about government's knowledge of our involvement in the attack on the World Trade Center? Location is L.A. Workers Center, 1251 South St. Andrews Place. Drama Stage Qumran presents Sunday, August 21st at 4 p.m. Location, The Exchange, 114 West 5th Street. The actors will do a dramatic reading of speeches from Marcus Garvey, Malcolm X, Dr. King, George Jackson, and Angela Davis, followed by a panel discussion with Fania Baruti, AOUN organization, Clyde Young, Revolutionary Communist Party, and Dolores Canales. Her son is in the state prison at Pelican Bay. This will be followed by a Q&A, and it's a free event. On August the 21st at 1 p.m., a film by John Salas titled Amigos. It's about the Filipino guerrilla fighters. After the film, it would be a theater and dinner party setting. Location, Fourplex in Santa Monica, 1332 2nd Street, Santa Monica. For more information, www.amigomovies.com. Tuesday, August the 30th at 7 p.m., Dr. Mongo will be hosting the Poetic Justice League at Fernando's. Location, 519 South Spring Street. More information, 213-784-1703 or 213-370-5395. Also, a special event for the month of August is the 21st Annual 2011 NAACP Theater Award and Festival Weekend. This will be August the 25th through 28th at the LA Theater Center, location 514 South Spring Street. The Festival Award ceremony will be on Monday, August the 29th at the Directors Guild. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, just send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com. Attention, Earlene Anthony. If you would like to call into the show for tonight, our call-in number is 800-893-9562. Now back to our host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson.
Thank you, Ms. Earlene Anthony, with our community calendar. Down at this time, we're going to do in the studio with us is Dr. Mungo. How you doing, Dr. Mungo?
I'm doing great, Ishmael.
Yeah, we also have Jamal in the studio also. How you doing, Jamal?
Very good. How you doing, Ishmael?
Fine. Yeah, we want to get into a discussions about what's happening down here in the homeless community, Skid Row, and also we want to talk a little about prison reform, a lot of parolees who end up in the Skid Row area staying down here. But first of all, Dr. Mungo, tell us a little about yourself.
I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. Well, my home is Cleveland, New York, Memphis. I was born in Memphis. I was raised and educated basically in Cleveland, Ohio at Case Western Reserve University, have a doctorate in comparative philosophy. But, you know, that isn't really important when it comes to dealing with social things and what's taking place on Skid Row, per se. Skid Row, I'm very familiar with because I've lived in just about every Skid Row area in the United States, like the Bowery in New York, Skid Row, and nothing seems to change. People are treated like they're the new plantation, so to speak. So that's what I am. I'm an activist. I'm a writer. I'm a poet. I'm a philosopher. I'm a person for the people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to get off into the artistic side a little later. But tell me, how did you first come in contact with Skid Row, the area down here?
I came out here the first time in 1961 because of a blizzard back east. And I wanted to find how to warmer climate. And so I came out here in 1961. I think I was 21 years of age at that time. And I had a brother who lived on Skid Row. He lived on 5th and between Wall and San Julian. And so they had different hotel arrangements at that time. You could bring a guest in and you would pay $1 guest fee, and then you could stay there all night, all day. And then you would have someone else going out, bringing in food or whatever. So Skid Row at that time was totally different. It was becoming predominantly black at that time because, as we know, the history of Skid Row in L.A. at one time was predominantly white. During, you know,
I remember you used to have a venue over at LA Can working with Pete White and Becky Dennison. You guys used to do open mic doing arts walk. T- Tell us about that. How did that develop, and what happened to it?
Well, you know, I've had several venues. In fact, when I was out here in 1961, I helped develop a venue called the Fifth Estate. It was in West Hollywood, Sunset. And I developed this here venue called the Fifth Estate. And we made, over time, we made the national news in Newsweek. Then I developed, when I came back out here the second time, I developed a venue in right across from the La Brea, Park La Brea. And it was called The Hole. And I got quite a bit of notoriety from that, and then I established a venue in Little Tokyo. But I can say L.A. Can is one of the most memorable moments of my life, because there were down-earth people, you know, the homeless, people are recovering, people trying to find an expression for themselves. And so I really enjoyed working with Pete White, and I really enjoyed that stint I had at L.A. Can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, L.A. Can, a very important activist organization down here in the downtown area. Let me ask you this, Dr. Mungo, because you stayed right in the midst of what they call Skid Row, the recovery zone, San Pedro between 6 and 7. And one thing that I've noticed about a lot of the mom's pop stores down here is the high prices that exist in these stores. What do you think about that, and what do you think can be done about
that?
You
know, I'm very concerned about the prices that they charge down here. In fact, I don't patronize any of the places, and it would be great if we could get people not to patronize them. I'm really looking, my dream has been to move a 99-cent store only down on Skid Row, because actually this is what's happening. People are going to the 99-cent stores, buying their 99-cent products, and then bring them down here and doubling the prices. So I'm really interested in trying to get some 99-cent stores down here. If it could become a community effort. In Cleveland, at one time, they wouldn't sell Black's McDonald's franchises. They kept upping the prices. You know, okay, we'll give you a franchise for this amount or that amount. But what we got to do as a community is come together and see if we can pool our monies into bringing in a franchise, a 99 cents only, mm-hmm. not a 99 cents and up.
Yeah, we've had a discussion with a couple of the neighborhood council members about trying to get a 99-cent store down here in the Skid Row area. The other issue that I want to bring to your attention and to discuss and talk about, I've noticed a couple of little small stores in the Skid Row area that have the policy of where they would let just maybe two or three people at one time come into the store, and huge security. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, I think the first time I encountered a situation of that kind was at Jack's, and it was on Fifth Street. And I didn't know that a person could stand out and relegate how many people came into the store. But then you look at it in a certain way. If you have, say, 30 or 40 people in a store that's only, 2,000 square feet or something like that, then, you know, theft becomes evident. I can understand that. But I did not patronize that store. Mm-hmm. I had a choice. Mm-hmm. I have a bus pass. I have, you know, at that time I had a bus pass, so I had a choice. And this is what I think most of us got to do on Skid Row. We've got to kind of say, what other choice do I have? Mm-hmm. and then you act upon that choice.
Mm-hmm. Do you think some of the community activist organization that should be organizing in relationship to some of these things about the mom's pop store, the high prices in the Skid Row area, and the what we just got to talking about, how they allow just one and two people to come in there with the high security. That what do you think about that, whether or not some of these community organizations should get involved with doing something about that?
You know, well, they should get involved. And then, you know, it's difficult to get involved if you don't have an alternative. The main thing, you've got to have an alternative. Mm-hmm. I have a bus pass. So that gives me that's number one alternative, because I can get on a bus and I can go to Superior Market. I can get on a bus, I can go to Ralph's. I can get on a bus, I can go to a Trader Joe's. So before we can really come face to face with this problem, we've got to have alternatives. So we don't have to go to the Green Apple and pay $2.90 for a dollar jar of coffee or $1.99 for some spaghetti sauce.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Mungo, we're going to come back to you in a minute and finish our interview. I want to get, we have Nabingi Kutu on the line. He's with the Martin Luther King Coalition for Job, Justice, and Peace. How you doing, Nabingi?
All right. How's it going, brother?
Oh, just fine. Yeah, we got you back online. Now, look, can you give us an update on the Westwood VA situation?
Well, we had a demonstration out at Westwood and San Vicente yesterday, which is where the land that was deeded to the veterans is located. And there's been a guy out there for a number of years, about 3 years, named Bob Rosebrock. He's a war veteran, and we came out to support his demonstration and also to look at the facility, look at the grounds, and see what we can do to provide some community support to stop the privatization of that land by the Veterans Administration.
The privatization of that land. Can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah, what's happening is that the land was deeded to veterans in the late 1800s by a wealthy family that owned the land. And for the last 100 years, it's slowly been slipping out of the hands of the veterans into private companies like Budget Rent-A-Car. There's a charter school on the property. There's a lot of vacant buildings on the property also. So there's a lot of underutilized land there. And as I spoke to you earlier, they're claiming that the veterans, the homeless veterans in particular, are not coming there often enough. They have beds and services available. So that's something that needs to be looked into.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think it's a situation where a lot of homeless veterans is not informed about the service that's available to them, or is something else?
Well, it made a lot of sense what you were telling me as far as the proximity of where Westwood is. Most of these guys, they have their possessions on them, so I can see a problem getting on the bus, riding the bus to go to the Veterans Administration. And also, the housing is not permanent. It's transitional housing. And I know that there's organizations like PATH and New Directions that are involved in that effort. So with your help, we should find out. We should test it. It sounds like one of the biggest issues with homeless veterans are that they do not want the restrictions of being confined in transitional or permanent housing, the restrictions that come with that. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, because you have more experience with working with homeless vets.
Yeah, that's a big part of it, the structure-type programs that we find out down here in the recovery zone. Could you tell us who is behind the lawsuit that was filed a little while ago?
There was two lawsuits. One was filed by the ACLU for Bob Rosenblatt, the main guy that's been protesting out there. And his lawsuit involved a freedom of speech issue where he was hanging the U.S. flag upside down, which is a sign that land in distress, land that's been illegally seized. So the security for the Veterans Administration arrested him for defamation of the flag, and the ACLU got that suit thrown out, or that arrest, that charge thrown out, and I think there was some damages also that the plaintiffs were awarded in that. And then the other lawsuit is ongoing. That's involving the family that deeded the land to the veterans in the 1800s, and the ACLU is involved in that also. And that is to stop the privatization of the land.
Okay.
The one with the flag has been resolved.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me ask you this. We was talking at a meeting over the weekend, and you mentioned something about the number of prisoners, parolees, that's getting ready to come back to the community. Can you touch on that a little?
Yeah, that's called realignment, part of Jerry Brown's budget austerity measures, or so-called reform measures, and really, it's just basically dumping state prisoners onto the county for a lot less money than what they're being, what the services are costing at the state level. And so there's a big crisis, potential crisis here. It's kind of like the public is being used as a guinea pig, because we don't know how many. There will be two types of people or sentenced, or two types of inmates coming down from the state. One will be those that go right to the county to finish their sentences, which will be reduced. And then there's those that will be released through what's called non-serious, non-violent, non-sexual offenses, which is a big percentage of the population. There, you also have what's called non-revocable paroles, and some of these guys are going to be released on parole, and they won't be revoked. And I don't see why they should just take them off parole or probation altogether if it's non-revocable. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of issues involved. The community-based organizations are not really plugged into the funding aspect of it. That's mainly the sheriff's, the probation department is leading the effort, the implementation of AB 109, which is Governor Jerry Brown's realignment bill. And the sheriff is a big part of that, since a lot of the inmates are going to be transferred from the state to the county jail. So,
well, let me ask you this. Is there an opportunity for community organizations to network and form some kind of concept where they can have some kind of community supervision of these inmates coming to the community?
Well, there are organizations working on that. Oliver Sinan, Susan Burton, the Youth Justice Coalition, and there's also organizations that get funding from the state for bed space, temporary transitional housing, some permanent housing, and there's a big issue with the lack of jobs just for the average person. So when you start talking about people with a conviction, you know, that the job situation really gets dismal for them. So there's so many issues involved here, and a lot of the people that are in state prison, a big portion of them are there because of parole violations. A lot of them are petty parole violations. So by putting them in the state prison system, that's actually making their chances of rehabilitating and doing better in society a lot worse.
Let me ask you this. You got any events or meetings or anything like that that's coming up that you would like to let the community know about?
Well, the community, what part of the realignment process involves a committee at the county level called the Community Corrections Partnership, and it's supposed to be a joint effort between the community based and faith-based organizations and law enforcement. And this CCP is implementing, is setting up the implementation plan for AB 109, and it's only law enforcement that has the 7 votes on this committee. So we have been getting the community to come out to, first of all, know what this committee is doing, and then second of all, we're pushing to get more empowerment for community-based organizations on this committee. So their meetings are Thursday at 3 p.m. at the Hall of Administration. I think it's 500 West Temple in the County Board of Supervisors building. So also, do you want me to give out an email? Or?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay, my email address is nyankuti@gmail.com.
Okay, hey, thank you very much for taking the time, and then I'll be back in touch so we can sit down and talk about these issues.
For sure, yeah, we got a lot to talk about, and thanks for inviting.
Thank you, and have a good evening.
Okay, bye.
Okay, at this time, I'm going to go back to a few more minutes on our interviews. I was talking to Dr. Mongo, but also in the studio, we have Jamal. Jamal, tell us a little about yourself here.
Again, it's a pleasure to be with you and Earlene here in the Skid Row Studios, and thank you for inviting me. I guess Belial, who's our third partner in the Poetic Justice League, is MIA, so perhaps they'll give a good shout out to him. Thanks, Belial. Stay in touch. We're moving on. Poetic Justice League, as mentioned in the announcements by Ms. Earlene, will be meeting again this
last Tuesday of the month.
Last Tuesday of the month. 30th. Thank you, Mongo.
Yes. That's the 30th.
Yeah, that's the 30th, and we plan to have, as our featured poet, of course, we always have a theme. Our theme is Jack, James, and Geronimo, which is Jack Kevorkian, James on Ness, and Geronimo Pratt, all who passed on the same same day. And our poets, the Poetic Justice League, myself, Dr. Mungo, Belial, Mona Jean,
Ken and Rains.
We have a shout out to all of them who have helped make Poetic Justice League who we are.
Let me ask you this. What's the goal of the Poetic Justice League? What are you trying to achieve over there, Fernando?
Well, that's Belial's main expression, our mission statement. Basically, we want to introduce poets, some of the best poets in Los Angeles, from our point of view, and give an evening of expression for the community to come out and talk about issues like you're talking on your program this evening, homelessness, jobs, incarceration, open forums so that we can have the tools and means to be able to express ourselves.
Let me ask you this. What is the difference between, say, spoken word and rap?
You know, you always nail me on that one, Elvin. The evolution is probably the best thing to think about. If you start with the last poets who came along in the late '60s, poetry became more more dynamic, more down with the people, away from the literati or the sterile halls of colleges.
Yeah, the academic straitjackets.
And since then, poets like the last poets, Gil Scott-Heron, have given birth to a voice of which is the buildup of what rap has become. You know, the Run DMZ, it's great use of music and rhythm and Afrocentricity. It's exciting. Mm-hmm. During the late 70s and by the time the 80s and 90s came along, we had a genre called slam poetry. It's a school of poetry that I come out of. Miri Baraka, numerous people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, right now we have a call on the line. Who am I speaking with?
Hello?
Yes. Hello. Who am I speaking with?
Hey there. This is Michael Rouse, and I'm a good friend of Dr. Mungo.
Hey, Michael, how you doing there? You got a question for Dr. Mungo?
Oh, yeah. Hold on. Yeah, no question for Dr. Mungo. Dr. Mungo is, we're going to launch a website of Dr. Mungo in about 2 weeks, and I just wanted to tell people that.
Oh, well,
and
yeah.
It's going to be Dr. Mungo. Is this Jamal?
No, that's Melvin there, Michael. How you doing? Okay. It's good to hear you on the airwaves.
So I just wanted to, plug Dr. Mungo's soon-to-come website, and it's going to be Dr. Mungo, like all one word, drmungo.com.
What's content of? Tell us a little about the website.
Well, let me see. It's developing now, but we've got a whole, maybe a dozen of Mungo's poems that we videotaped, and my friend Irene Prastio here, and we're in Vancouver. She's developed the site, and we're going to have it, make it interactive, and Mungo's going to be blogging and tweeting. He's getting into it, and there's going to be Mungo's artwork, and there's going to be all basically his whole library is going to be, printed word, and then we're going to have a selection of videotape poems.
Oh, thank you, Michael. Dr. Mungo, go ahead. Oh, anyway. Thank you, Michael. I was saying Dr. Mungo, he's going to be performing live here at the latter part of the show. He'll be doing two pieces, Penitentiary,
nice.
And he'll be doing Jax here at the
Jax.
Latter part of the
Jax.
Show.
I love Jax. I love both of those. Yeah. Those are brilliant. Those are two of my favorites. And I just tried to call Mungo the other day, and his phone's off, and it was answered by Magic Jack.
The Magic Jack.
Is Irene there?
There you go. And I knew the Jacks were there. What's that?
That's Dr. Mungo.
Is Irene there?
Yeah, Irene's here, yeah.
Hi, Irene.
Hi, Irene.
He says hi. Say hi, Irene.
Hi, Mungo. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm in the studio with Jamal.
Skid Row Studios.
Yeah.
It's a marvelous place to be, and our friend Ishmael is graciously, man, this is a great thing.
Yeah.
The launching of the website that Michael has put together, he's an award-winning documentary. He's kind of humble, maybe he doesn't promote himself quite as much as he'd like to.
I don't know the guy who's providing us with this space, but I've got to really thank him for this opportunity.
Jeremy Skid Row Studio.
Okay. My pleasure. I really appreciate what you guys are doing, and this is the kind of content that I wanted to put out there for the community. So thank you guys for doing this.
Thank you,
Michael. You still on the line?
I'm still on line. Thank you for hosting Mungo and we'll keep you posted with Mungo's. We'll update you when we get the site up and going.
Thank you, Michael. Have a good evening.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Good night.
Good night,
Michael.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, now, at this time, we're going to come back to the interviews, but at this time, we're going to move into our host corner. This is a short monologue from the play Nailheads about the 80 to 100,000 people who sleep on the county of Los Angeles on the streets of Los Angeles on any given night. It was performed as part of the Presbyterian Conference in Gardena, July the 9th, 2011. It's about 7 minutes, so enjoy.
This is
serious business here. Each one of these nails symbolize over 100,000 people that sleep on the streets of the county of Los Angeles every night. This is what these nails symbolize.
That's some serious business.
Yeah. I think I'll tell them a little about it. Maybe I can use this one right here. That in the county of Los Angeles at any given time there are between 80,000 and 100,000 people just living on the streets, and that includes women, children, the elderly, and many of our veterans who have served that country. Welcome to Skid Row, Central City East, a recovery zone, the central point of the homeless population in the county of Los Angeles. And don't think the homeless problem is just a Skid Row problem. They are homeless all over the county of Los Angeles. Now, you don't see the nails that's embedded throughout the foundations and framework of the house. It's the same with the homeless that you don't see or hear about on the news. They escape your homeless count. Now, these are the invisible homeless, the ones who live in their car or crash over to a friend's pad. And sometimes they get sick and end up in the emergency room. And after a short stay without insurance, sometimes they get dumped on Skid Row. Now, they dump us down here all the time on Skid Row. They dump us from prison. They dump us from the community, beat down by life, looking for the American dream that became a nightmare. They dump us from other cities, looking for Hollywood and trying to be in anybody's show. But reality kicks in, and you end up on Skid Row. And I'm a nail head. Now, just like a nail, I've been hit on, bent but not broken, and put in all kind of dark and tight spaces. Just like the homeless, I symbolize the homeless population. Foxes, birds, cats, and dogs, even they got a pad. That's what made me mad. Dreams turn into nightmares. Junkies tripping off the view. A view from 1 to 4. One life-giving creative spirit. In other words, we in this together. 2, duality, the dual nature of human beings. 2 kind of people in the recovery zone. Those that need to be here with their support services, the others just passing through. 3, the 3 modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. The 3 major religions to spearhead the effort and form the 4 points of the compass. Universality. Make it universal. I'm a nail head, strong as steel, the glue that holds things together. The foundation on which you stand, I'm a nail head and I'm homeless in my mind. Standing in place and marking time. An endless journey going nowhere, riding on a train, going in circles. In the language of dreams, things are never what they seem. Are you one of a kind, tripping off the view because you're homeless in your mind? Standing in place and marking time, homeless in the city of angels. Angels without mercy, it seems. You care more about your animals than your fellow human beings. At one time, the cats and dogs lived in the streets, and the boxes in alleyways was their home. Now they have flipped the script. The cats and dogs live in the houses, and the people live in the boxes and alleyways. How did that happen? Do you think it's right for the animals to live in the houses and the people to live in the streets. Thank you very much. Now, Ms. Early and Anthony is going to tell you about the hygiene kits that we tried to collect and pass out to the homeless in the downtown Skid Row area. And then Dr. Sousa Stouffer is going to talk about the group that we belong to, the Compassionate Response to Homelessness and Poverty.
Thank you so very much. The homeless in the downtown Los Angeles area is usually fed by the missions in that area. So when people come down, they want to have the homeless, but what they really need are hygiene kits, and in those hygiene kits, we really need to put a pair of socks. Thank you.
Just wanted to quickly say, we formed our Compassionate Response group because, like probably all of you, if not most of you out here, our church was working on homeless issues, but each of us in our individual churches aren't going to fix the problem because it's too big and it's systemic. And the only way we're going to fix it is when we all come together and work on it as a big picture issue. And that was part of our idea of coming together and collecting these nails, so that we can say, you know, this is our commitment to house all the people in our city and our county who are homeless. And we have over 74,000 of them, which are going to Habitat, and maybe they'll even end up in the three houses that the Presbyterian building now. And it comes from people all across the city who want to house the homeless people. But you're going to be hearing more about ways to do that, including Home for Good, which is a citywide plan. So keep tuned, listen for a bit, and we'll figure out how to do this together, all of us. Thank you.
Excellent.
Okay, now in our next section, the Voices from the Community section, we're going to meet two members from the downtown Los Angeles Neighborhood Council, Patty Berman and Wendell Blassingame.
And start the record. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, my name is Patty Berman. I'm the president of the Downtown Los Angeles Neighborhood Council. And for those people who don't know what a neighborhood council is, they're part of the Los Angeles Charter since 1999. And they were chartered so that each individual neighborhood would have its own representation and people who could help the constituents of that neighborhood to better go through the meanderings of City Hall, which is a pretty difficult thing to do. So we're here to help people with what they need to do, be kind of a liaison to City Hall and help them understand their government better and to just take a look at our neighborhood and see what needs to be done. And it's the last part that's kind of vague and a very, very big job.
What is your history with Skid Row?
I moved down to 4th and Main 10 years ago and have been working with the community ever since. So I, as far as Skid Row is concerned, when I first came out here, I volunteered at School on Wheels. I was with them for several years teaching math to the kids. Finally ended up kind of adopting one of the kids, and while she was living with me and I was trying to get her through school and everything, that was pretty much taking up my time. But she got through high school. She is working now and looking to do some college classes too. So you take a deep breath and you just hope that they'll be okay.
Wow, that's a good story. Before Skid Row, what was there in your life?
Actually, a lot of different things. I mean, I was one of the fortunate people. I came down here because I wanted to, not because I had to. I liked it here, and I wanted to make a community. And I think we are making a community between all of the various groups that are here. I know that we've got people on each side who keep going at each other. But I think that we really do have a well-blended community here. And I think that we look out for each other.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Ms. Berman.
You're welcome.
And look forward to having you live one evening on the show.
I would like that.
All right. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Berman.
I was playing football in college this for these.
I'm sitting here with Wendell Blasting Game. Wendell, tell me a little about yourself. Where are you from? And what do you do down in the downtown LA and in the Skid Row area?
Okay, first of all, my name is Wendell Blasting Game, and I've been on Skid Row for approximately 10 years. I am now holding the office on Downtown Neighborhood Council on the executive board. Also, I show movies at the Gilwood Community Center that's in the basement of Skid Row from on Saturdays and Sundays. On 7 hours on Saturdays and 7 hours on Sunday. I'm having an anniversary on August 22nd, and that will be completion of 7 years of consistency of volunteering, giving the individuals opportunity to watch movies and be not only be a safe haven, but a chance for them to be able to relax and also get resources from me that I've accumulated in the time that I've been on Skid Row. My main interest is not basically for them to watch the movie. My main interest is to make sure that they're safe. And what I mean by safe, I mean mentally safe. Everybody's okay. Four checks for being homeless. Mm-hmm. Everybody's get depressed and low self-esteem. And somebody must give them something positive that they can live on for the to carry them out. And that's what I do. I can't judge anyone. I find everyone has one good quality, no matter what that may be. And I dwell on that.
That's great, Wendell. Where were you born and raised?
Okay, I was born in Tennessee.
Really?
Kingsport, Tennessee. Kingsport okay. is in the mountains. Okay. And I came here to Los Angeles when I started high school. And then from there, I went to play football and got a scholarship to go to college. And I was fortunate to graduate from college, and I taught school.
Oh, you were a school teacher, huh?
I taught school for numerous years in the Bay Area. Yes, in kindergarten and first grade. And then I ended up, it was time to relocate because my kids were grown.
Mm-hmm.
So I changed professions and became an electrician.
Oh, yeah.
And unfortunately, my wife got ill and she passed. And I got injured on my job and I lost a few limbs. And this is what they do in the cosmetic world. Then I lost focus. What I mean by focusing is that I wasn't sure what I really wanted out of life or had a goal or purpose when my wife passed. So I just searched around and ended up mainstreaming down here on Skid Row, not because of drugs, not because of alcohol, but just self-esteem. And I turned around and flipped that to a positive way. When I went through Skid Row, I saw all the different additives, and I saw the individual they were trying to make it and adjust it, and I found there was something that I can do to make a change. And so I was able to write up a program. I submitted to SRO. They approved it, financed assurance, and then made sure that I had the right bulbar air projector and the seats. And then, therefore, I've won numerous awards from Citizen of the Year in 2007. I received many plaques from the city recognizing my contribution to Skid Row. I'm just a city councilman or showing the director of movies. I am more in the emphasis, like I said earlier, in social services. I'm providing and aiding to all the other agencies that do not provide for. For an example, if Los Angeles Mission or the Union or the Midnight, there are people that are new that comes down every day on Skid Row and they need directions. And we have came up with a Skid Row map that we're constantly sending out to the public. But at the same time, their individuals like to talk to people too. So, and that's where I intermingle mainstream now.
Very good, Wendell. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, our last section for today is a live in-studio performance by Dr. Mungo. So please put your hands together for Dr. Mungo doing a piece called Penitentiary and a piece called Jax.
Thank you again, Ishmael. I'm going to have to renege on Jax. I will do Penitentiary, but I think we should hear from Jamal Asalam also. So maybe if you don't mind, after I do Penitentiary, he will make his contribution. You know, I'm quite modest.
You are so modest.
Oh, sure, no problem.
This is my signature poem. I have it up on part of my musings because it's a poem that's most requested. And for this audience, I'm really going to enjoy it. But I am the vindictive, the ruthless, the eye for an eye, the counterstroke last ditch that never say die. I'm heartless, ferocious, grossly inhumane, fiendishly satanic, a low-down, dirty shame. I'm loathsome, ill-natured, repulsively vile, arrogance, treachery, abuse is my style. My name is Penitentiary, I'm made of steel and stones, and should you land in my domain, I'll crack your flesh and bones. You're not as tough, and rightly so, when without your knife or gun, I'll have your ass before you blink, providing I want fun. Of several ways to handle you, that's if you like it rough, on ways to hurt and break, man, I haven't found enough, just push me, punk, then be doomed. I know you will not win. I've been around for quite some time, and since the span of sin, I've held the toughest men there were behind my cold gray stalls, watched them risk their worthless lives trying to scale my walls. Some were killed, few escaped, later to return for crimes far worse than before, and then I watched them burn. My name is Penitentiary. Let me come straight from the cuff. I'll crack your head, pull out your heart. I pray you think I bluff. You flapped your huge illicit wings betwixt the grip of law, and then you made that one mistake that trapped you in his claw. You preyed upon the weak, the old, and made them fear you true. Well, listen, faggot bitch, take note, the table's turned on you. I'm in command, I hold the cards, I call the do's and the don'ts. Create the dreams, feed the hopes of all your needs and wants. Now, should you thirst for freedom's fire, I'll light your smothering wick, supply the gas, provide the flint it will take to light your bic. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Mungo. Before I move to Jamal, just a couple of things. Tell us about the environment in creating that piece. How did that come about?
Oh, you know, I posted it in my musing. In fact, it was a poem. Initially, the poem was I Am Alcohol. And a friend of mine who was a member of AA, and he was also editor of a newsletter, asked me if I would write something about alcohol and the effects of alcohol. And I said, of course. So he published it in his newsletter, and then there was a prisoner who happened to be a subscriber to the newsletter, and he said, hey, you think this guy could write something about the penitentiary, you know, give it a twist on the penitentiary or the prison? So I say, okay, I can do that. And so That's how I came up with the penitentiary. I used some of the same things that takes place when one is addicted to alcohol and, you know, that struggle, and I turned it into penitentiary. And I can't even remember the first two lines are. No, one line. I am alcohol.
let me ask you this before we move to Brother Jamal. I asked you one time about what is a spoken word, and you call it something else. Can you elaborate a little on that?
Okay, well, I call myself a dramatic enunciator because I believe in freeing myself from the academic straitjacket of poetry, you know. But there have been quite a few people that I really admire, like if you were to read If We Must Die, Let It Not Be, like, who is that, Jamal?
Claude McKay, in
fact. You just can't stand up there and say, if we must die, let it not be, you know. You really got to emote and put, you know, that emotive aspect to it. And that's how I see spoken word.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dr. Mungo. Jamal, what piece you gonna do for us?
Well, If We Must Die. It's funny, he's so in tune with it. The reason I like to do this is because Claude McKay was one of the premier writers of our time, and definitely was quoted by Winston Churchill, and it's If We Must Die. If we must die, let it not be like hogs hunted and penned in an inglorious spot, while around us bark the mad and hungry dogs, making their mock at our cursed lot. If we must die, oh, let us nobly die, so that our precious blood will not be shed in vain, and even the monsters we defy shall be constrained to honor us, though dead. Oh, kinsmen, we must meet the final foe. What though before us lies but the open grave? Like men, we'll face the murderous, cowardly pack, pressed to the wall, dying, fighting back.
Yeah, it's one of our tremendous poems. Thank you.
That's the difference.
Thank you, Brother Jamal. Okay. One more word from Dr. Mungo before we close out. A little short word. Our guest, Dr. Mungo, give us a closing word.
Blessed be this venue. Hopefully it will continue. I know with the direction of Ishmael and Earl, things are going to get better.
Thank you, Dr. Mungo. Now, I would like to extend a special thanks to Jeremy and Skid Row Studios, and also our two guests here, Dr. Mungo and Jamal Al-Salam. And also a happy birthday to my sisters and brothers, Shirley Weisinger and Rashad Wali Muhammad, and also to my hometown of Greenville, Mississippi. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report, and I leave you with the song that opens the show, The Ghetto by Donny Hathaway.
Yes, this is the ghetto.